Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
A solution and a problem are very much a yin and yang kind of thing. They're, if people don't know what yin and yang is, it's basically you see these two kind of paisley symbols, black and white, with a little dot in each one. And basically, the philosophical context is that you always have a solution contained within a problem, and you always have a problem contained within a solution. It is an interrelated process of creativity, and it goes much even further than that. It involves your subconscious and your conscious. A lot of people think this is a conscious process and problem solving. But what it also really is that your subconscious is a very, very powerful force, where you can train your subconscious to be a powerful force in problem solving if and only if you have a clear, clear question to ask.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Doug, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
And thank you for welcoming me to your podcast. It is an honor, and I look forward to some vivacious and fun conversations.
Well, it is my pleasure to have you here. I found out about your work by way of your publicist, who told me about your book, Conquering the Chaos of Creativity, which we will get into in depth, because in my mind, all creativity is just chaos. But before we get into all that, I wanted to start asking, what did your parents do for work, and how did that end up shaping and influencing the choices that you ended up making throughout your life and career?
Well, you warned me that this would be not the typical interview, and I love it already. My dad was an entrepreneur. He had a grading and paving company that he started in his late 20s. And my goal was always to start my business before him. And so he was always someone that might say did it his way. He had a pretty successful grading and paving company in the Bay Area, San Jose area. And my mom was a nurse, and I would say just the side of a saint. She almost a year before she went to heaven, she was still working in the emergency ward because she said she liked the energy. So here I have my father, who was basically a construction guy, typical tough guy, and my mom, who was this giving, wonderful nurse, and that was the environment I grew up in.
Your dad being a construction guy, what elements of creativity did he infuse in you, and what are the lessons that he passed on to you from his own work that you later applied to yours?
Well, you know, there's a story I tell people about my dad, about how he had his own creativity. And it was exemplified to me is that when we would go out to a job and he would have to estimate, you know, how many yards of dirt, you know, how much rock, you know, the asphalt and blah, blah, blah. And we would walk and he would just walk around and he would say, this is probably going to take about 2,000 yards of rock. And I said, Dad, how do you know? He goes, I just know, you know. So he developed, he had this insight, this creative thing, but you would never call it creativity. It was just an intuition for his work. And, you know, actually I talk about that in my book under methodical intuition. That's that intuition can be built. It can be trained based upon what you do. So yeah, he wasn't formally what people would call creative in any way. The only other thing for my mom was she came from a very poor family and always loved to play the piano and always wanted to be a concert pianist. And I started taking piano when I was 7 against my will. My dad had promised me as a very tough guy. My dad was about 6'2" and my mom was about 5'2" and big guy. And he goes, Doug, I got your back. You'll never have to take piano. And I came home from the best baseball practice of my life almost when I was 7. I could hit anything. And my mom said, Doug, I want you to meet your new piano teacher. And I looked at my dad and I said, Dad, you love him. And I took my bat, I hit it on the ground, and I said, I'll never take piano lessons. Next week, I was doing scales, 7 years of classical piano. And how that affected my creativity, about the sixth year, I started, my mom tried to keep me interested, and I started taking jazz piano lessons. And when I was 12 or 13, I got into a band in junior high. And then it became really fun. We would have like 50, 60 people in the front yard. I'd be playing rock. Everyone in the band was in high school and college except me. And it was during the hippie era. You can kind of imagine that. And we started playing at parties all around. So that, in a way, started my creativity rolling from the musical side. Yeah. But I had always been my parents always were very supportive. And I was always an artist. And I won a national art contest when I was 6 for Converse tennis shoes that just come out. And I won it in a large van about, 50 feet long, pulled into my house and unloaded about 10 pieces of playground equipment. We had a big yard. And that was my first inkling that if you're creative, you're rewarded. So, and my mom always supported my science. I love science. So I was always dissecting brains and cow brains and doing a lot of science research from when I was in first grade, because my mom maybe had a vision I'd be a doctor or something. So it wasn't the traditional support of what you might think where creativity grows. But as everyone has seen, the beautiful flower growing in the middle of a parking lot, you know, in the asphalt, you never know where creativity can roll from, you know. So that's always been my philosophy.
So, you know, it's funny because I also was a musician, not because my parents forced me to be. When you play the tuba and you live in a small apartment and your parents basically are annoyed as shit that you're as dedicated as you are to it, because it drives everybody crazy. But this is something that I've been thinking a lot about, and it's something that I found in common with a lot of very creative people, particularly writers who have very lyric gifts, often are piano players. There's just something about the way they write. And I always say that writers who are musicians make music with words. Why do you think that music has that sort of impact on creative thinking that it does? Like, what are the benefits of musical instrument that most of us don't really understand if we never played one?
I think, you know, that's a really wonderful jumping off point to discuss creativity a little bit more. And one of my quotes I use in my book about Albert Einstein, one of my favorite thinkers, is that, you know, he would always talk about these ways that he invented E equals MC squared and all his advanced theories. And what he would say that he uses architectures of thought, or he plays the piano, and he thinks in a way of symbols. And then after he creates this construct, this vision, then he brings it into the culturalized linguistics and mathematics. So the point here is that there is a kind of a higher level type of thinking process that is available to us. It's not taught, but everyone innately has it. I tried to teach it in the book. And the process is that one has to get beyond linguistic view of the world. There's this scientific theory called the Sapir-Whorf theory, where it's stated that you can never think beyond the semantics of your culture. And so when you're inventing something new, you have to, because your culture really may not support the creative exercise or what you're considering. And it would be analogous to, let's say, like a caveman who has maybe 10 words, like, you know, primary words like eat, sleep, whatever, and is trying to envision multiplication. You can't. You have to go outside that. And so I think music supports or can connect you to a dialectic of thought, of symbology, that is not semantically and culturally based. And so that's probably why. It is a tool. If you know how to use it and expand upon it, it can become very powerful. Yeah. So that's my response.
Well, you brought up this idea of something not being taught. And this is something that I've, you know, often had conversations with people about is the role of creativity in our education system and why it's not prioritized. And I think the place where this became very obvious to me was walking through a Barnes & Noble. If you go to the kids section in a Barnes & Noble where they have, you know, books for teaching, you know, kids who are being homeschooled, and you look at the curriculum as it goes from first grade to 12th grade, it's like they're just sucking the creativity out of you, and, you know, with each year that goes by. Why do you think that is? And what would you change about that given your background and your experience?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com.
Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
This has been a matter of a great deal of thought as of late with a lot of educators who have contacted me. Our society is not focused on expanding one's imagination and creativity. It's focused on learning and us kind of fitting into the appropriate boxes in life. And as you get older, it almost is a non-consideration to invent, to think of new ideas. You know, there's a certain pragmatism that takes over, right? Where it's called being mature, an adult. And unfortunately, that obfuscates creativity and imagination for many, many people. And so the process starts very early. I think it is at its most basic level, a beautiful beginning when kids are drawing and thinking and doing things in grade school. But that kind of goes away. And the main issue is that we are not taught how to expand our imagination, how to improve our innate abilities to think, and so as that moves forward, you know, we all more or less become non-creative automatons, not because we're not all innately creative, but it's simply not taught. Now, I've done a couple podcasts lately with some principals at schools, and they've been so excited that they have had continuing podcasts where we will get kids in their school. And there's something I call the 15-minute creative exercise. And what is always the complaint from the principals and the teachers? Well, there's not enough time in the curriculum to even teach what we have, you know. So this is something for parents where I've gone through these kind of creative exercises with the kids, and this one school district is actually starting to try to institute it. And it goes, it's probably a much longer conversation than we have right now to tell how I'm how I've kind of invented this. But in a short synopsis, I lead some kids through the process of inventing, and it could be quite wild. I think one kid invented a pizza that was a telephone, and the pepperoni was doing something, and blah, 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 blah. And it really doesn't matter the literal capability, but the fact that they're taking steps to expand their mind and realize that anything is possible. And by doing that every minute, every day, is something I do. I wake up every morning and I'm challenging creativity from the morning to night. But just that 15-minute exercise, the teachers and kids are really excited about. So it is teachable. And I'm actually, the Cal State Long Beach, my alma mater, the Dean of Science Education, has invited me to teach a class based upon my book to STEM majors on how to think creatively. So now I'm kind of going to the two extremes. I'm working with grade school kids to expand their creativity. And in the future, I'll be teaching a class for a college student. So I've kind of entered into the world of education, and that's kind of why I wrote the book. I wanted to start teaching what I have learned over the decades of invention.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, you know, it sounds to me like your career and your trajectory predates sort of the era of social media, the internet. And, you know, like I ended up writing a book called An Audience of One, Reclaiming Creativity for Its Own Sake. And it's kind of funny because, like, even for me, the message of that book was challenging because I run a business. And one of the things that I think has been a very sort of unfortunate byproduct of, you know, the internet, even though it facilitates creativity, it paradoxically inhibits it as well, because I think there's this sort of, you know, huge narrative or this, like, you know, sort of dominant cultural narrative that if you don't build an audience of millions of people, if you don't get, you know, paid to do it, or if it doesn't make you rich or famous, then it's not worth doing. And the funny thing is I found that often my, you know, most sort of like rewarding projects, the ones that ironically ended up reaching the biggest number of people, were the ones I did out of just, you know, morbid curiosity. And given, you know, you sort of started in building a, you know, a creative career long before this era, what is your view on all that?
Well, let me ask a question to your question, if I may. So are you trying to focus on the origins of more of my intrinsic, let's say, appetite to write about creativity and imagination and explore it, or the more of societal view of how that happens? So I need a little more specificity.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. Well, I think that, you know, the overarching narrative societally is that, you know, you have to be extrinsically motivated to do this thing. And I think in a lot of ways, social media and the internet have played a big role in that, because they, you know, give you these sort of artificial vanity metrics,
right?
You know, followers and fans and all this other nonsense that people get really obsessed with, and they overlook craft because of it.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, I think one could just go back to Maslow's like hierarchical of needs. You know, I think a lot of real creativity and imagination exist at the top level, self-actualization. And that is based upon a more intrinsic process of focus. Now, you know, if I go back to my humble beginnings, I was always very inventive. I was always very creative. And it just was innate in me, this interest to buck the status quo in every way. It was just like hardwired into me. And I think the process for me to write and explore is something that started when I started my company almost right out of college. And it was even peppered a little bit by my first instructor in college, Mike Kammermeyer, who taught methodology. And his view was, you know, life is too complex. It has to always be methodically considered and understood. And one of the other teachers in our department had a totally different view. He goes, my intuition is all I need, you know, and I would listen to them argue. And it is these kind of beginning to listen to these different philosophies of how you can be creative, how you can invent. And I was propelled mentally into recording, you know, how I did something. And to me, it was always a fascination of when I would invent something. And I've done a lot of things. I mean, I've invented hundreds and hundreds of products and 20 market categories, and I've got hundreds of patents. And for me, it was not the accomplishment, necessarily the financial accomplishment, as much as training my brain to think outside the box, to use these different techniques I developed to be more creative. And for me, I call them creative weapons of survival almost, because when you are pushing your mind to the limit and your creative capability, you need techniques to allow you to invent a new idea and be successful. And when you're paid for it, you know, hey, I'm sorry, Doug, you know, we're still going to pay you, even though you failed, you know, it's only success. And so at times, you know, I would have 10 projects at once I'm working on with everyone. And it was, I have to say, a real imagination and creative high. I loved it. And as the years progressed, I kept writing in lab books all my techniques. And I started being called to say, Doug, you know, speak about how you do this, how you do that. And so about, I would say 10 years ago, I decided to start writing a book. And it became something of, later on I would do, you know, pick it up and put it down and be thinking about it. But then about 3 years ago, I was kind of really focusing on it, and it became the rather large compilation of ideas that you see in Conquering the Chaos of Creativity.
No.
And what is most important is that it is really a journey. It is a construct for you to explore, because it's going to be impossible for anybody to, not impossible, but rare people that I've talked to have gone through and read the whole book. Usually you go through based upon what you need at the time, it's kind of a place to explore rather than an endpoint. So rather long-winded explanation for why I intrinsically have always been motivated to, be creative. But like I say, with me, it was always hardwired. I would always... I don't see how someone cannot be. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. So before we end the book, there's one sort of thing I want to cover. I mean, you've worked with some of the most iconic brands on the planet, you know, Apple, Mercedes, all of them. I mean, what goes into the process of creating products that end up with the quality of you know, like an Apple iPhone or like an iPad? I mean, I've read Johnny Ive's books. I've read, you know, Leander Caney's books about Steve Jobs. I know it's an insane level of obsessive, you know, compulsive almost attention to detail, but what else goes into, you know, products of that caliber?
Well, I think the thing that if I was to just do a broad brush stroke of a lot of the CEOs I've worked with, you know, from Jobs to Gates to other top people in corporations, in movies and so forth, there must be a visionary who has the ability to synthesize and understand all the variety of disciplines that goes into whatever it is their company is creating. It is the most important aspect that visionary guide is pulling everyone together to get to that idea. And when it's not there, it becomes a tragedy. You can have the most talented workforce, the most amazing history of a company, but without that visionary leader, it all is lost. And it is something that I can tell many stories of CEOs that failed, that didn't have that vision, and others that do. That is the fulcrum point. So when I'm involved within my area of expertise, I've learned that I need to be the visionary leader and guide. And sometimes I don't have all the information, so I have to empower and connect other visionary people in their own discipline in a way that that broadens their scope and kind of like a butterfly, allows them to fly freely. And it is maybe that could be another book someday. It is a big challenge to work in these big organizations.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Well, let's get into the book. I mean, to your point, like you said, I mean, this thing is like an encyclopedia, and you know, it seems like one of those books that, like you said, you pick up, you know, off the shelf when you need it, when you need an area to cover. And so I thought the best way to actually go through this was, rather than go through every little detail, was to kind of go through the sort of five, you know, overarching categories that you have here, which are inspirational creativity, analytical creativity, psychological creativity, spiritual and philosophical creativity, and invention creativity. But I want to start with analytical creativity, because I think that, you know, a lot of creatives skip that part. They don't really think very much about creativity from a problem-solving perspective. They're just like, oh, I'm going to make this thing. And then, they wonder why nobody is interested in what they've done. Because every book I've read on branding, every book I've read on copywriting, every course I've taken on copywriting is like, ultimately why anybody pays you for your work is because you've solved some sort of problem for them.
Right. Yeah. I think this is probably to retrogress for just a second. Sometimes people are being creative not to solve a problem, but just to engender a process of happiness for them. you know, that they're going to do something. And the goal is not to solve a problem. The goal is kind of an intrinsic experience, right? And that is important. But when you are motivated to actually solve a problem, when there's something that is an obstacle, and I just call the status quo always an obstacle. The status quo is like let's say the metaphor of a body with white blood cells. Anything you do to change the status quo, it wants to reject, and even if it's good. And you have to be chastened and very, very strong to change the status quo of society when you're trying to improve human lives. It's just kind of a fact of life. So I think that the point is here is that I've worked, as I said, with hundreds and hundreds of different inventions and people. And the top companies throughout the globe. I've started my own companies. And one thing, I've actually even worked on political systems too for the government, which I've solved some rather seemed like unsolvable problems. But what I see is that most people are unclear about what they're even trying to solve. You'll ask someone and say, well, you know, okay, well, tell me what it is you're solving. They tell me a solution. And I said, well, no, just tell me what exact problem are you trying to solve? And I do this with a lot of college students and even with professionals. And no one is trained to have problem awareness. And I, in my book, I take people through one of the foundations of creativity, which is problem and solution awareness, where you, like with a problem, you have to ask every question you could possibly ask. And then you learn how, after you ask 100 questions of your questions on how to start putting those together into some sort of a relevant hierarchy. And that then is your guiding light, because the solution is always contained in an aware problem statement. One of my other famous quotes from Einstein is that, he says that if someone gives me only an hour to find a solution to an issue, I'll spend 55 minutes focusing on the problem statement or the problem awareness and 5 minutes on the solution. Because the guiding light to a solution is becoming aware of every detail of a problem. And it is rather liberating when you do that, because then you can always go back to this problem statement, rather comprehensive one. And as you generate myriads of solutions, you can always go back to that and say, oh, does that fit? It's kind of like creating a puzzle without all the pieces. And so the solution part is when you start creating the puzzle pieces and you kind of say, does that fit? Does that fit? So that is a kind of a brief overview. In my book, I teach this with great detail. And actually, I use this every day at work, and even people that work for me, I'm teaching this. You know, what it creates a need to have a keen sense of awareness. You must have kind of a certain amount of vigilance and passion, because the other point is that, you know, when I talk about my foundations of creativity, you know, like we talk about, let's say, the analytical part for problem solving, and then we look at the inspirational part. The act of analysis is not just cerebral. To engage everything that you are as a human being, which is spirit, you know, your emotions, you know, your psychology, one must realize that even in the analytical process, it has basis in passion, a driving force that can break you through the what might be mental obstacles. So herein is a very important point I'm making, that analytical processes are not just analytical. And every time that you're being creative, there's a connection of all these other facets of who you are that must be engaged to empower your full ability as a person. So that's just a little taste of where my book takes you.
Yeah. So let's see, you know, just for the sake of a practical example, we look at, you know, the sort of idea of analytical creativity and apply it to something like the process of writing. What does that look like?
That is a rather open-ended question as to how creativity can be used in the process of writing. I'd say that...
Well, I don't mean creativity broadly, but sort of, you know, what you call analytical creativity, like this idea of problem solving and looking at it through the lens of solving a problem.
Well, I think that the most important part of getting back to the idea of trying to create a guide for yourself to explore solutions. And how do you do that? Well, think of a building. If you don't have a good foundation and you try to build a skyscraper, it will ultimately fall over, right? And a problem statement is the foundation of all your creativity. It has to be well considered and it has to be comprehensive, and you have to really think it through. And that in just a short synopsis is a very important thing. I'll bring up another point. It's a solution and a problem are very much a yin and yang kind of thing. They're if people don't know what yin and yang is, it's basically you see these two kind of paisley symbols, black and white, with a little dot in each one. And basically the philosophical context is that you always have a solution contained within a problem, and you always have a problem contained within a solution. It is an interrelated process of creativity, and it goes much even further than that. It involves your subconscious and your conscious. A lot of people think this is a conscious process in problem solving, but what it also really is that your subconscious is a very, very powerful force. And I teach this in some of my chapters called Subconscious Cloud and Methodical Intuition, where you can train your subconscious to be a powerful force in problem solving if and only if you have a clear question to ask. And that is something I also teach in terms of how to gain awareness by asking all the possible questions. And, you know, it's really important to understand that a great problem statement calls everything into question. And that is a process of curiosity and passion that have to be connected to the analytical process.
Yeah. Well, let's talk specifically about sort of inspirational and psychological creativity, because I think that there are two sort of things that I often hear from, you know, our readers or people who talk to me. One is just an absolute lack of confidence. The second is a lack of clarity. The lack of clarity makes sense because I've seen, you know, answers in surveys where when I ask somebody, you know, what their, you know, ultimate goal would be, I'll get something as vague as a meaningful business that needs creativity. And I started writing, you know, this article about why you're not accomplishing your goals. And I was like, a meaningful business that needs creativity is so vague that, you know, Pablo Escobar was incredibly creative and his business was meaningful to cocaine addicts.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, on the idea of like psychological and inspirational creativity, the inspirational creativity, it involves many different parts to harness your belief and free your mind and ways to immerse your point of view. So you see everything in the world as your inspiration. Whereas psychological creativity is, I teach tools that I have created that will basically use the innate neurology, psychology, and physiology of your mind to become more creative. And that's the psychological creativity chapter is an incredibly important part of the book. And I document a tremendous amount of scientific studies that support my theories that I've generated over the years that I think are an important documentation that these aren't just the whims of one creative person. These are let's say, processes that have been tested and largely undeveloped and unused. And to me, they were the tools of creative survival when I'm inventing. The most important part for responding to what you say, where people are trying to be creative and they're not getting to where they need to go, it really does go back to an unclear problem statement. Most people are walking around kind of in a murky gray view of awareness, and most of the products in our world, if you think about it, are kind of responding to that murky gray view. Like, there's so many things that don't work well. Your computer software, when you get in your car, you know, things aren't easy to operate. Even simple products, you know, that you have in your kitchen, it adds to frustrations in our life. And those are all a result of whoever invented them wasn't quite thinking clearly about the unmet needs of people and what they really need to provide. So what my point is that there are different avenues of creativity. If you simply are looking for ways to empower your ability to be more creative, the ideas of methodical intuition, where you can train your mind to be intuitive, or the subconscious cloud, where you can train your subconscious to solve problems for you, which is a very beautiful process, and I use it every day. There's all these different techniques that teach this creativity, and I want to get back to this idea of an interconnected whole of creativity. In my book, I have a graph that shows the analytical, the spiritual, the philosophical, the invention, imagination, and psychological. I talk about them as separate parts, but in reality, they are an interconnected whole. And that when one really wants to take this journey into creativity, it is a lifetime adventure. And I use the metaphor of martial arts. I've been in martial arts since I was a young kid. And one of the things you observe when someone first takes a class and they learn an inward block or a punch, they become immediately empowered. And they're feeling like, okay, man, now I'm really understanding this, and this is getting, you know, this can help me. But in reality, that is like a neat little step. But to become a great martial artist, it requires practicing hours every day for decades, right? And that is the master level of creativity. My book is there for the people that want to attain that master level of creativity, that want to create what I call a creative construct that is their own, and I try to teach that. But to really get to that point, it takes years and years of work. But it also, the book is also designed for beginners, like those people in martial arts that take that first inward block or punch. There's immediate results that can empower you, that can get you going into some steps of creativity. But the way I look at this, literally could be a 4-year course in college of teaching imagination and creativity, and which can be applied to any discipline in life. So that is a rather long-winded explanation. I apologize.
No. It's all good. I think the that actually, you know, is a perfect segue to kind of wrap up our conversation by talking about sort of what you call the spiritual and philosophical aspects of this. Particularly when we talk about failure and perseverance, right? I mean, the very nature of creative work is that it's unpredictable, it's chaotic, and there's always a possibility that you're going to fail and nobody's going to like what you've created, or that it's just going to be an absolute sort of disaster, which I think does a number on people's psyche and self-esteem. And, you know, I think in running a creative business, one of the big things I've learned is just as important as the work is your ability to manage your own psychology.
Yeah.
So how do people, you know, prevent themselves from getting derailed when things don't go according to plan, things don't turn out how they want them to, you know, like projects flop, or, you know, you take the average blogger who's like, oh, I've been doing this thing for 3 months and nobody reads my blog. Of course, you mentioned this is a lifetime journey, which, you know, I think that that's one thing that is also missing is patience.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the most important point here is that philosophically, the journey of creativity is something that should be celebrated. And it is something that is always going to be a hard thing to do because you're basically changing the world. You're creating something new. And in that process, and, you know, I've learned this with a little bit of perspective, is that it's important never to be depressed by failure. And equally, it's important that one is never intoxicated by success. They're both equal sides of that theory of yin and yang. You've got to understand that the journey of creativity will always involve both. You will always fail. You will always succeed. And the act of being creative is by far the most important thing. Now, the perseverance and failure, we are all haunted by failure. And I talk about in the book in many areas where how to use even people with severe emotional scars. You have a certain dynamic psychologically that you can either use that to be stronger and empower your life, or it can eat away at you and it can tear you apart. And that is a decision process that is a very important thing in creativity, that the bigger problem you're solving, the bigger, the larger amount of failure that is possible. And it is really, really, really important to understand that anyone who tries anything new will always fail. But let me go back to something a little bit more, let's say, positive in that what I call a child's perspective. You know, innately, you have everything you need to overcome failure. And, you know, as you've grown from a child to an adult, society has taught you that failure should be castigated, should make you feel bad, that, you know, you need to unlearn this idea about failure. And embracing the social narrative of failure is most likely the exact thing holding you back. The feeling that you have failed is a wall that needs to crumble. The reason I say that is that when you're young, everything you did was trying and failing. You ride a bike and you fall, you get up. You're learning to, like, as a baby, you walk. And you kind of sit back down. Baby isn't like sitting in a corner depressed out of failure because they tripped a couple times learning to walk. It is this innate ability of a kid, this unbridled enthusiasm it sounds antithetical, but failure is fun. Failure is a part of learning something new. And again, it is not a bad thing. It is something where we should celebrate our creative perseverance. And the more you do it, the stronger you get. And for me, I have to tell you, I failed more than anybody. And because of that, it has allowed me to succeed more than anybody or most people. So that's my kind of point on that.
Wow. Well, this has been really eye-opening, thought-provoking, and insightful. I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Somebody or something unmistakable, you mean unique?
Yeah, it's funny because I think there's been numerous answers to this question, and you know, it's really up to you as to how you interpret it. Yeah, I mean, unique is kind of one definition of it, but I've heard every answer you could possibly imagine.
I would say that by being finding your personal truth, I think this is part of the creative and imaginative journey, is to find your personal truth. And when you do that, it empowers and connects all the areas of imagination and creativity and psychology and spirituality. And, you know, say, well, how do you find your personal truth, and how do you even start on that journey? I think it is a process of understanding what is your passion at the moment, or this year, or this decade. Is you must connect with your passion. People in life that are not connected to their passion, that are doing whatever they're doing, it's kind of sad, because you don't have your full engagement of and totality of who you are as a person. So I think people that have found their personal truth, that focus on it and every day try to exemplify it, even if they haven't found it, it's always a revolving door where it changes, and it needs to always be a focus of who you are and what do you believe in, and connect your passion to it, to always pursue it with all the force of your being. So that's my answer.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom, and your insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, the book, and everything else you're up to?
Okay. Well, the book is on Amazon. You could go to Books Under Amazon and just type in Doug Patton, and you'll see it, or the book title, Conquering the Chaos of Creativity. There also is, if you Google Conquering the Chaos of Creativity, you'll see quite a few articles that people have written on the book. And also you will see the website. And there's another website too, Patton Design, my last name and the word design. The book is on that website too. And it also talks about all the inventions I've done and so forth. So there's a lot of ways to connect it to your goal to find creativity. And as we sign off, I really hope that some of the listeners will think about finding their passion and connecting to their innate powers of creativity, because I think it's the most important innate power we all have. So again, thank you for today. Great questions, and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.